Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Before I get to my great guest this week, I just wanted to share that my book is now out. Finding Your Summit has the same name as the podcast. I've now done over 300 podcasts, and I have a brand new book. But it is it did debut at number one on Amazon, which is really cool. So it's how to build resilience and faith to rise above life's challenges. Jason, you know something about that. That's number one. Number two is yesterday, I just launched the Seven Summits Summit, which is going to be held September 18th to the 20th here in Sun Valley, Idaho. We've got a bunch of great speakers such as Mariel Hemingway, Tom Flick, 8-year NFL quarterback, John Foley, Blue Angel pilot, talks about precision and excellence and things like that. So it's going to be amazing. We're going to be inspired. We're going to do things in the outdoors. We're going to climb. We're going to push. And hopefully, people that attend this, only 150 people can come, will get a lot of value out of that. And finally, I am out on the circuit doing a bunch of keynote speaks. So if you need something, reach out to me, www.markpattisonnfl.com. And on that note, we will jump in today's amazing guest, and he is truly amazing. Jason Koger. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I hope you're doing well.
Well, we got in, well, I was introduced to you through a common friend. I've known her now for a very, 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 very long time, and I knew her dad back in the day, and really, what a great guy. And she's just a gem herself, Susie. But she suggested that I have you come on the pod. And again, fitting with the theme, people overcoming adversity and finding their way. I want to set this up in the right way because it's really inspiring. The more I dug into what you've been through and how you've overcome, and the best thing that I think I've taken more than anything is that you have not positioned yourself as a victim, but rather as an opportunity to go out and spread a lot of love and optimism and what people can actually do around the world based on things, limitations, we'll call them. So let's go back to 2008 and what happened on that ATV.
Yeah. So March 1st, 2008, I had been working for about a year, 7-12s. So I was working all the time. I was 29 years old at the time, married. My wife was 27, and we had two children. My oldest, her name was Billy Grace. She was 21 months old, and my second daughter, her name's Campbell. She was 3 months old. It was the first day that I was home from working, and it was the first warm day of the year, and I decided that I wanted to go on a quick four-wheeler ride around my grandfather's farm. I live on my grandfather's farm, so it's my house, and then right next door is my uncle. Next door to him is my grandfather's house. Next door to him is my other uncle, and then my cousins were all same age, and just wanted to kind of raise our kids the same way we were raised. And so I took off on a quick four-wheeler ride around my grandfather's farm, and basically it's a U shape. Where I left my house, and I end up at my grandfather's grain bins. And on that ride, the second corner, there was a down power line, and I did not see it until I came in contact with it. So I took 7,200 volts of electricity. And sometimes people's like, they don't understand what 7,200 is, but that's actually more than the electric chair. The electric chair is only 6,900 volts. It was enough electricity that it shut my entire neighborhood down. I remember the vibration going through my body, and it was almost everything went dark. Like I closed my eyes, and what happened is my heart had stopped. So I took 7,200 for 30 seconds. So for 30 seconds, my heart was completely stopped, and as soon as the power kicked off, it threw me off the back of the four-wheeler. I hit the ground hard enough that it started my heart back up. And as soon as that happened, I immediately woke up. I felt like my body was on fire. I remember trying to climb down into a ditch to cool off, to get in water. My cousin was actually behind me, so he grabbed me and was pulling me out of the ditch so that I wouldn't get in the water. And 911 was called, and I remember the first fire truck coming down and the ambulance, and my cousin, not thinking that I would live, he did not want to call my wife, which was, a few hundred yards away. Didn't want to call her, and he ended up calling my mom and dad that live in town, and my mom called my wife and said, "Hey, Jason's been in an accident." And at that moment, didn't know, what kind of an accident. And so my wife made it back to where I was, and as soon as she got there, I was already they were loading me up in the ambulance. And I remember looking down at my left thumb, and that's where electricity came out, and it basically blew my left thumb off. And I told you my grandfather lived there, but he had passed away about 3 months before I was injured. And my grandfather was a single arm amputee. He got his arm caught in a corn picker when he was 29 years old, basically on the same farm. And I remember telling my wife, it's like, "I'm just going to lose my thumb. Like, it's really not that big of a deal. It's just a thumb." And I remember all the way to the hospital, I was like, "Papa lost his entire left arm, and I'm just going to lose my thumb." And it just kept on going through my mind, and as soon as I got to Vanderbilt, I mean to Owensboro Hospital, I was loaded up in a helicopter,
Yep.
and I
So
was,
hold, let me hold you for a second. Okay. So you've got just a whole bunch of, I mean, just right there, we could talk for 4 hours on, right?
yes.
Before we're just about to get on the helicopter, and you've just gone through this traumatic event, and so I just want to also make sure that we're setting the stage towards what things were going to happen. So first of all, what state were you in? So I never caught that. You're in Tennessee.
I'm in Kentucky.
You're in Kentucky. Okay, so you're in this Kentucky. You're living in this property where your grandfather's been, your parents are nearby, and you've got your wife and you got a couple of kids, and now you're just going out on a ride with your buddy. So at least you've got somebody that was there to respond to what was going on. I think you mentioned that they're behind you. So as you are going over this down power lines and getting completely electrocuted, he is behind you watching in horror as you are basically imploding because of the electrical surge that's going through your body. Is that about right?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he said that it looked like 4th of July was coming off of my body. Sparks were flying.
Yeah.
I still had my clothes that I had on that day, and I had like little cigarette burn holes all through my pants and my shirt, where those sparks were literally coming out of my body. And from what he's seen, I think his sight was, man, he's not gonna live through this. Like, there's no way, I mean, I couldn't imagine seeing somebody I grew up with, my cousin, watching this scenery of literally sparks flying out of your body.
So he's now watching as sparks are flying out of your body. You've got the stuff that you wear in your pants and everything that's got looks like cigarette holes in them because the energy is just like literally blasting out of your skin, and now you're being loaded into the helicopter, and now you're going to fly off to a hospital to examine what do we need to fix and so on and so forth. And as you said, the only thing that was going through your mind at that time was just thinking that your thumb, one thumb, might have to be amputated or something, but you can live with that and you're going to get over this. And I can't believe I survived this. So now we're in the helicopter, we're going off to the hospital. Tell me what happens next.
Yeah, so when they loaded me in the helicopter, I went feet first,
Yeah.
so my feet were touching the front windshield of the helicopter. I had no idea why I was going to a different hospital, and I was accepted to go to Vanderbilt Hospital to the burn unit. My entire right arm was third degree burns, which I didn't know that at that moment. And when we got in the air, as soon as we lifted in the air, I had nurses beside me, and they just kept on saying, "Hey, we're going to prep you and have you ready for surgery." And I remember telling them, like, "I don't understand why we're even going to Nashville. Like, it's literally just my thumb." Because, I mean, it had basically, my thumb was just barely hanging on by some skin. And it kept on going through my mind, like, "I don't even understand why we're going this far." And then the nurse told me that they were going to go on and stick a needle in the side of my jugular vein, which is where they would give me my medication at one point, and they were going to go in and cath me as well. And they cathed me in the helicopter, and I remember seeing my catheter, the bag that your urine goes in, and it looked like Dr. Pepper, and I had no clue what that was at that moment. But when you get electrocuted, it burns you from the inside out, and it causes poisonous toxins inside your body. And that poison wants to be released somewhere, and it goes through your kidneys. So my kidneys were literally shutting down, is what that color of that urine was. Again, I had no clue what was going to happen to me. I remember getting to Vanderbilt Hospital. I remember getting out of the helicopter, going down an elevator. I remember going down a hallway into a room that looked like a morgue. And that was the last room that I seen. And it was literally a stainless steel bed, no sheets. Everything was stainless. And at that moment, I thought back and I'm like, is this what you see when you die? Like, is this death? I don't know where I'm at. I don't know what I'm seeing. But that room was called Hydro. And Hydro is where they actually take a pressure washer and they wash your dead skin off of you. And I went through that procedure with no medication whatsoever because they were waiting on my wife to get there to sign release forms to do whatever they had to do to save my life. And then that was the last room I literally remember is that hydro room. And then I was put into an induced coma. My wife got there, signed release forms, and immediately I went into surgery. And they told my wife, and my wife, I think about her story too, but she gets to the hospital, she's thinking the same thing. He's just going to lose his thumb. Like, I don't even understand why we're coming here. For the doctor to come down and say, hey, I need you to sign release forms for me to amputate whatever I have to amputate. I need you to sign release forms for blood transfusion. And if you do not sign these papers in the next 20 minutes, he's going to die. Like, he is so close to death. And obviously, what goes through her mind, I mean, she gets down on her knees, she started praying, and she was like, you know what, Jason, as an amputee, or my kids without a dad, like, it's a no-brainer.
No brainer.
I'm going to sign these papers.
Yeah, of course.
Immediately I went into surgery, and he amputated my right arm, right above the wrist, right off the bat. He didn't even, look at it really. He just amputated. And then on my left arm, he actually cut me from my elbow down to the end of my hand. And when he opened it up, he said that it looked like a shotgun had went off on the inside of my arm. All 10 of my tendons were ripped from my fingertips and they were wrapped around my wrist. So my hands would have never worked. But that's not why they amputated. They amputated because that's where the infection was and he was trying to straighten my kidneys up. As soon as he opened that up and seen my left arm, he knew that he had to amputate immediately. So I was put into an induced coma for 3 days. So now I'm a bilateral arm amputee at 29 years old.
So I just so I'm clear, is it your on one arm, it's your from your the amputated essentially a hand, correct?
Yes,
And
I'm right in between my elbow and my wrist.
okay, I got it from both hands
On
or one
both.
hand? On both. Okay,
On
I
both.
gotcha. Okay, I gotcha.
And so I'm in an induced coma, and I was put in the induced coma for 3 days. So on the third day, I woke up from this induced coma, and I was strapped to a bed, and I remember seeing a nurse beside me. And the first thing that I thought is, like, I want to talk to my dad. And I didn't mention this earlier, but my dad was a drill sergeant in the Army. We were taught as kids that you set a goal and you try to reach that goal, and there's nobody to hold you back. Like, you do everything you can, work extremely hard. My dad, in 1984, my dad had $1,500 to his name, and he started a construction company, and he was very successful. So I saw this my whole life. I saw the work my dad did, the goals my dad had. I know that my dad had the people saying, you're never going to make it. You're never going to be this. You're never going to be that. But my dad worked so hard and he instilled that into me. And I just felt like that was my piece to talk to my dad. And I remember asking for him to come in a room. And my dad came in the room and he sat down next to me. And I said, "Dad, how bad is it? Because I'm strapped to a bed. I have no clue that I
No.
lost my hands. I have no
No.
idea." And my dad looks at me and he says, "Jason, I don't know how we're going to get through this, but we've always had faith. And we know that God's always going to be good. He's going to get us through this. I don't know how, but he's going to get through it." And he said, "In order to save your life, they had to amputate both of your arms." And man, you think about that at 29 years old. You know what it feels like to reach in your pocket and get something out of your pocket, or you know how to you know the feeling of silk or cotton, or you know the feeling of touching your head or holding your wife's hand. And I mean, I could go on and on and on the things that you know your hands do for you. I mean, it's and now I don't have it.
Well, it's everything. You can go from your top of your head all the way down to your toes. And, God made humans to function in a certain way. And every single, like your eyebrows serve a purpose, and your eyes serve a purpose, and your ears, and your mouth, and your tongue, and your teeth. They're not just there for good looks, right? And you go down with your arms, like you said, and your legs, and walking, and the whole thing. That's a lot, right? That takes a lot off your table, like you said, just doing the simple thing of holding hands to, reaching out and shaking hands to eating dinner. We eat theoretically three meals a day. And so how are you going to go about doing all that stuff? So I can't even imagine when you're getting this news from your dad, even though he's being the stoic, I know we're going to get through this. The reality is you still gotta have to get through this thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it hit me in a way that, I sit there and so many things going through your mind, like, how am I going to provide for my family? How am I going to dress myself? How am I going to use the bathroom, bathe myself? I mean, like, all the stuff. But in the back of my mind, I think I was also thinking, I'm still a dad. I still got to be a dad. I have no choice. I still want to be the person that I was gonna be before I lost my hands. I mean, you take everything away from somebody. I know, you being in the NFL, like, you go from being this great player in the NFL, and then all of a sudden your hands are gone. Like, what do you do? Everything you've ever known is gone. It's done. It's not with you anymore. And
Well, look at I mean, I appreciate you saying that, but going from the NFL to, I mean, that was a huge transition for me, and it was tough 2 years, but I still had my hands, right? I mean, I would say, this is next level for you because you're trying to figure out how you're going to move forward, what's your career, like you said, what's your career going to be about. And by the way, I have to figure out something where I'm going to have to adapt, where life is going to be different going forward than it's been in the past. So I can't even imagine. So tell me about the recovery. Like, how long? Okay, so now this news comes in and you have to reset your mind, and I'm sure there's a period of time where you were going to have to adjust and get through this whole thing, but let's go into that.
So I wake up and, I met my doctor for the first time. His name was Dr. Jeffrey Guy, and Dr. Guy sits in a room with me, and by this time I'm in a regular room. This might have been the fourth day or the day after I woke up, and I remember him sitting with me and saying, "Jason, I don't know what this looks like for you, but you're going to be in this hospital for at least a couple months." And I remember saying, "Dr. Guy, I cannot be here that long. I got a family at home, and he said, "Jason, you're going to be here for a while." And he told me, why they had to amputate and all that. And he sat down with me and he said, "Jason, there's one thing I want to help you do. I want you to think of one goal that you have in your life, and I want to help you reach this one goal while you're in this hospital room for months. One goal." And he said, "Make sure that it's realistic. And make sure that it's something that's so important to you, and I'm going to help you reach it." And he stood up to walk out of my room, and he said, "I want you to think about it for a couple of days." And as soon as he got to the doorway, I remember looking at him, and I said, "Dr. Guy, I know what I want." And he said, "Man, how do you know what you want? Like, I just asked this question. How do you know what you want?" And I said, "There's one thing that's most important to me, and that's my kids." And I said, "I have to be able to hold them again. It's all I care about. I'll figure out everything else, but that is what I have to do." And I remember him and myself, just like sitting there just thinking like, man, that is important. That is the most important thing for me. And him saying, I'm gonna make sure that happens. And the next day, Dr. Guy comes in my room and he said, hey, Jason, your girls are here to see you. And he said, if you're okay, I'm gonna go get them and I'm gonna bring them into your room. And I said, no, you're not. And he said, what do you mean I'm not? I said, Dr. Guy, I cannot have my kids in this room. They're gonna be scared anyway. Their father is laying here with no arms. I have feeding tubes. I have tubes hanging out of my arms. I have heart monitors, catheters. I mean, like you name it, I was hooked up to it. And I said, I cannot have them come in this room. And he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go to the waiting room. And he said, Jason, man, I can't do that. Like, I'm going to have to unhook you from all this stuff. And he said, if I unhook you and it, like your feeding tube, if I pull your feeding tube and you don't start eating, I have to put it back. And I said, man, that's a chance I'll take. And I talked him into unhooking me from everything. And I went to the waiting room and I held my girls for the first time. And I had this peace about me that I just reached the first go, the only go, the most important go that I had. And I reached it. And I just had this peace about everything's going to be all right.
I
We'll
love
win.
that. I love it. I love it. Okay, look at we have about 5 minutes left, and I want to spend this time on I mean, this story is just incredible, and so I want to dig down into let's talk about the bionics that you have today. So life happens, you move forward, you've now accomplished this gigantic and the most important goal you just talked about. And so just now the fix, which has been kind of you've got this amazing book too. I want to promote this. Handed a Greater Purpose for everybody. It's out there, Jason Coker. It's amazing. But let's talk about the bionics that you have because it's pretty cool technology.
So
Go.
I was only in the hospital for 12 days. I was released 12 days later. I was told that I would never get these myoelectric bionic hands because they're so expensive. And here's the hands. I was told that, they're $150,000 a piece. You're never going to get it. Insurance is going to say no. I was denied multiple times. I kept on fighting for my insurance. I end up getting accepted to get the bionic hands, multi-articulating hands. I became the first person in the world with two bionic hands, and it was just because of a timing thing. But I felt like my grandfather, I go back to my grandfather, I felt like he was the first amputee in the world. I felt like I was the second. I felt like I was the only amputee in, living in the world as an upper limb amputee. And I told everybody, I want to be the best prosthetic user in the world. I want to live my life the exact same way I was going to live before when I had my hands. And man, I started teaching myself how to drive. I like to hunt. I killed my first turkey a month after my accident with no prosthetics. I just rigged up a gun and I had a string from the trigger to my mouth, and that's how I killed my first
That's
turkey.
awesome.
I started driving my truck 12 days after losing my hands. And every single day I just went and I worked. And I think people see my story and they're like, man, you were automatically a success. No, I had a lot of failure. I think failure is the best thing that you can go through if you're strong enough to learn from it. And every single day I failed, but today I can do everything on my own. I can dress myself. I can travel alone. I was told I would never have any kids, any more kids. I have a 14-year-old son. He plays baseball. I throw a ball with him every single day in a batting cage. He plays football. I play with football with him. There is nothing that I cannot do today.
So
Not a thing.
let me ask you about this technology. And we only got about 3 more minutes. But the technology allows for the bionics, which I just saw, which it literally looks like from the Bionic Man in the stainless steel looking thing, and looks like it's a regular hand. But are you controlling that with your mind? How does that work?
Yes. So I have sensors laying on my forearm. So when I feel like I raise my wrist in there like that, that's what opens it. And when I feel like I lower my wrist, that's what closes it. And then I have a another muscle to put it in rotate mode. So then when I raise my wrist, it rotates and it can keep on going the whole time. And then I let go of my muscle. And then when I go down, it can go the other way. It's all muscles, but that's something that they're even working on now is mind control of putting sensors internally into your body where you'll have sensation one day. And I've been the first person in the world 5 times now with the newest bionic hands. I'm talking to a doctor now about those internal sensors, which I would be the first to do that. My story has literally gone across the globe. I share my story now. I share my faith. I've done an episode on Hawaii 5-0. I've got to meet people from all walks of life, and which has been so cool to meet, NFL players, to Major League Baseball players, to actors. And one in particular guy was RoboCop from the 80s. Me and him became really good friends, and he flew to my hometown, in a small hometown of mine, and he flew here and spent a weekend with me. And he said, "Jason, I wanted to come here to spend time with you because I want to surround myself with people you surround yourself with." And that hit me in a way that it doesn't matter what profession we are, how much money we have, none of that stuff matters. When you are a good person and you work hard, you can inspire anybody in this world. Anybody.
I amen to that, man. It's just, it's just, and for people that want to accomplish things, the first thing you got to do and make sure you do is shed that negative weight from other people that are bringing you down. And so you got to, make sure that those positive voices are lifting and you can fly high and as far as you want to go. And you're a great example of all that. Where can people find this book?
So I have a website. It's jasoncoger.com,
Okay.
JasonKoger.com,
Yeah.
and I have a link on that where they can buy a signed copy, and I send it straight from my house to them. And you can also book me as a speaker. I'm doing a lot of public speaking, and I'm on all the social media platforms. And my life goal now is to give back to people and show people that no matter what you go through, you can get through it.
Yeah, this is the reason why I do this podcast, and I started doing your episode. You're going to be episode like 300, and I've just talked to a lot of people, and you're just another inspiring case why I keep doing what I do. It's just when I'm starting to burn out just a little bit, and I'm not sure how many more pods I got in me. I talked to somebody like you who inspired me to keep going because it gives me a lift. Because when I start feeling sorry for myself, or I don't want to go climb this or that mountain, or whatever the case may be, I always look at people that are excelling, that are not letting their circumstance dictate their circumstance, right? I mean, it's that simple. And
Absolutely.
so, certainly thank you, Suze Mora, for introducing us. She's a blessing, you're a blessing, and I know people who listen to this pod, they're going to be lifted up. So I appreciate that. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really do appreciate you having me on, and let me share my little bit of my story.
All right. There he is, the one, the only Jason Coker. Thank you very much.